Today's podcast is sponsored by Zencastr. I use Zencastr to record the Tally Room podcast, and it's an invaluable tool. I record pretty much every episode of this show remotely, with my guests joining me from wherever they happen to be. Zencastr allows us to record with high-quality sound, even if the internet connection isn't the best. It records a high-quality version on the local desktop and then uploads it when the internet connection allows, meaning that the audio the listeners hear is usually better than what I can hear when I'm recording. It also allows for recording video. I use it to be able to view my guests, but you can also record video in 1080p. On one or two occasions, I've used Zoom instead, and you really notice a difference. It's super easy to use Zencastr. I set up a link for a recording and send it to my guests, and we're getting started in minutes. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code TALLYROOM, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting needs. It's time to share your story. Welcome to the Tally Room podcast. I'm Ben Rowie. Queensland voters have been to the polls and the results are now mostly in. Today we'll be discussing the results of the Brisbane City Council election, the two state by-elections, and council elections all across Queensland. My guest today is Maggie Perry, who's an elections reporter for Six News. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Ben.
Voters across Queensland went to the polls last week to elect their councillors and mayors in 77 councils, as well as electing two members of the state parliament in by-elections. The biggest contest was for the City of Brisbane, which is Australia's most populous council. The Liberal National Party has held a majority on that council since 2008. Maggie, there was a lot of expectation that the LNP might finally lose support in Brisbane this year, but what happened instead?
Well, I think that the Greens, instead of taking voters away from the LNP, rather took voters away from Labor, which is a bit different to what happened federally. And I think a lot of people were thinking that local election results might maybe mirror what we would have saw in federal election in 2022.
When you look at the results, it seems very clear that in a lot of places there's this swing from Labor to the Greens, but the LNP vote has largely stayed steady, which has been enough for Adrian Schrinner to get re-elected. We don't have all the council ward results yet, but at the moment it looks like the Greens maybe have picked up one ward, while Labor has lost a ward, potentially gained one other ward to compensate for that. But really, not a lot of changes despite the Greens actually picking up a lot of support. And part of the story there would be the use of optional preferential voting, right? In the federal election, we had compulsory preferential voting, which meant there was a lot more preferences that flowed between Labor and the Greens than we saw on Saturday night.
Yeah, the big issue for the Greens here in Brisbane was that they couldn't really consolidate their vote increase in the seats that really mattered as compared to when they do federally. We saw a lot of swings towards the Greens in fairly safe LNP seats or Labor seats, which didn't really affect them much, and they could only manage to pick up vote shares from Labor rather than the LNP, who were actually their main competitors in all of their target seats.
And there'd been a lot of talk, I mean, I think the Greens played this up a bit, but it probably came from others too, about the Greens winning a swag of wards, right? They currently hold the Gabba, which is very safe. The best chance outside of the Gabba appeared to be Paddington, where at the moment it looks like the Greens are probably winning, but it's pretty tight. And then you've also got Walter Taylor, Corporu, Central, maybe even Inoggera. They're all talked about. And actually what is happening is the Greens are the dominant centre-left party in all those seats and are coming close to winning them. But it looks like right now the most likely outcome is the Greens end up on no more than two. So pretty much all those seats stay in LNP hands, but not by very much.
Yeah, all of them are about 3%. The Greens talked about pull and veil a lot, and they actually had a 4% swing towards the LNP in that seat, which is very interesting. I think some of it, of course, would be optional preferential voting, but I wonder if a lot of it might be a bit of lack of willingness from Labor voters to preference for Greens in these seats. I mean, the LNP has been running pretty hard on the Greens being radical. I wonder if that might have taken a toll on them in Labor voters.
Although it's interesting, I looked at the preference flows and recently it's looked like generally Labor voters are a little bit less willing to preference the Greens than vice versa, but still much more willing than they are to preference the LNP. But it looked like actually there's been a big uptick in preference flows between the parties. If you look at the Lord Mayoral election or you look at the council wards, either direction, there has been this bit of an uptick. So I'm not really sure exactly why. I think probably
the fact that how to votes were freely available at this election in a way that they weren't in 2020 because of the COVID pandemic maybe helped a little bit. But it does seem like despite that scare campaign, there's a little bit more discipline of being an anti-LNP preference flows. But in the end, that wasn't enough. And if anything, despite the preference flows getting better, it seems like the OPV problem is a bit worse because, you know, if you have a situation where 70 to 80% of the centre-left vote is for one party, they need a lot less preferences there than if it's 50-50. And that seems like that's also been a factor, is that as those votes have gotten really even in some wards, it's meant that even a small share of the preferences being lost can really hurt.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to look at Labor preferences in corporate in 2020, for example, you'll see that they're much weaker to the Greens than the Greens were to them. And I think that's a big issue that the Greens have to deal with really getting Labor voters to preference them over the LNP in some areas where, say, they only lost corporate by, 5%, and Labor voters could have made up for that.
And, you know, the Greens have always had this problem that because there isn't much in the way of proportionality in Queensland, you know, outside the Senate, there's no proportional elections in Queensland. They've often gotten a higher vote and not really won seats. And, you know, like we're talking like the Greens vote for the council is around like 24%. It's enormous. You know, any state election in a small state somewhere else where the Greens are polling like that would be incredible. But they might fall short in a lot of places. And I think if they are serious about winning a lot of seats on a big council like Brisbane, you know, it's not like winning Inner West Council in Sydney or Yarra Council in Melbourne. It's a much bigger area. And at some point, they need to win across a few LNP voters as well, you know. Winning LNP voters probably would have been much more helpful to them, whereas it seems like, as we said before, most of the votes that the Greens have picked up have come from Labor.
I mean, the main issue here is that in 2022, for example, federally, we saw them pick up a lot of voters from the LNP in inner Brisbane city seats that they were eventually able to win because there was a lot of dissatisfaction with the federal government. Right now, I think that dissatisfaction's more aimed at state Labor government, which is a bit of an issue since even though it'd be nice to pick up Labor voters, they're not exactly who they need in competitive races where Labor isn't really in the two-party race.
Now, you mentioned state politics, and there will be a state election in Queensland in October. And even though the seat count has been a bit disappointing for the Greens, if you take these votes and you apply them at a state level, and you've always got to be careful to not just directly apply and say, well, this will happen, because that is never what happens. But the Greens have now shown themselves getting enormous vote shares in inner city Brisbane at a council level, at a federal level. If that happens at a state level, with a unpopular Labor government on the way down, which is what looks like happening right now, and we'll get to the by-elections in a minute, the Greens would have to be pretty hopeful of picking up more than the two seats that they already hold in inner city Brisbane.
Yeah, I can't imagine they really expect to do much after this council election. It was kind of the big hope for them, and it was going to be interesting to see how well they did at a council level. And they seem to have done worse than rock bottom for them. They expected maybe 4 or 5 wards. They might only get one. I don't think that will really help them at a state level. And honestly, this council result might directly affect it. I think a lot of campaigners and volunteers might be a bit disappointed with the results, not very motivated for the state election.
That's interesting though, because I mean, I don't know how much of that is the reality versus perception of results, you know, because they achieved enormous swings, quite a high vote. And I think probably, you know, maybe expectations are too high amongst those campaigners if that's their perspective. One thing as well, we're talking about historical context. If you go all the way back to the year 2000, so the LNP won the mayoralty in 2004. Former Premier Campbell Newman held that job for about 8 years before moving to state politics. And they then won control of the council in 2008. It turns out the 2000 election, long time ago now, saw Labor gain 2 wards off the LNP to hold 18 out of 26 council seats. Since then, Labor has not gained a single seat. They've gone from 18 down to 5 at the last election. If they pick up Callum Vale, which I'm checking the ABC right now, is projected as ALP likely to win. If they pick that up, that will be the first Labor gain in a quarter of a century. If they don't pick it up, they will be left with four wards, which is a quarter of what they held in the year 2000. So there's been this remarkable shift over a generation away from Labor, who used to be the dominant force in Brisbane politics. I think it's partly reflects people being willing to vote split between state and local politics, but also that kind of, as Labor has lost ground to the Greens, it has made it harder for them to win a lot of those close wards.
Honestly, I'm not exactly sure if the left vote has, you know, really dropped that much. I mean, it obviously has, but not by as huge a margin as you might expect when you lose half of all the wards of the council. But I don't think it might have dropped too much since 2000. And a lot of the issue is that optional preferential voting and new voters going to the Greens from Labor, they don't exactly go back to Labor after they get exhausted, because a lot of these votes from the Greens, they just don't go back to Labor, and that's their huge problem. And likewise, with that's the big problem for the Greens.
Well, in 2004, Labor polled 43.6%, the Greens polled 8.3% for council. So that's about just under 54% of the vote. And that is more than what they're getting now, but it's not an enormous change. And like even 2008, they were polling, you know, 37% and the Greens were on about 10%. So 47% in 2008, that is about what they're polling now. So there's not this LNP dominant. And in fact, the LNP vote is a bit lower than it was then. You know, then in 2008, the LNP polled 52.5% of the council vote and they polled 60% of the mayoral vote. But the LNP hasn't won the majority at either of the last two elections. So, you know, I don't want to dismiss the strength of the LNP as a factor here, but really they're just holding like a little bit less than half the vote. And that's a killer in a lot of these OPV wards. I mean, last election, it looked like there were three wards that would have gone to either Labor or the Greens if you had compulsory preferential voting, but instead went to the LNP. I suspect it could be even more, despite those preference flows improving, just because the distribution of Labor and Greens votes is so inefficient.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning is for Labor to keep optional preferential voting in Brisbane. It's clearly hurting them. Like, they've definitely changed it recently at a state level. They've changed from optional preferential voting to compulsory, which has definitely helped them in recent Queensland elections. I'm not even sure if they might have reached a majority without it, with the ever-growing presence of the Greens and even legalised cannabis, especially legalised cannabis, where a lot of those votes would exhaust without compulsory preferential voting.
Well, there was that moment, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, where the Labor government did actually propose reforms to local government in Queensland. They proposed introducing PR for undivided councils, which would have been great, and introducing compulsory preferential voting for single-member wards, which definitely would have helped Labor and the Greens in Brisbane. It got a really big backlash from the local government association and incumbent councillors, which, I mean, are often the only people who show a lot of interest in these things, and they have a terrible status quo bias. So whatever the current status quo is, that sitting councillors are always going to back that in. But there was a moment where they looked into it and they kind of didn't hold their nerve and dropped the issue. And I think generally Labor hasn't shown a lot of interest in the council election in Brisbane, actually. I think that for a long time they've been like, the LNP in Brisbane is a relatively moderate LNP and we can govern the state and let them run the city. But I think they might regret that when they see how much the Greens have like used council to build up their support and chip away at Labor's support when Labor's trying to balance, you know, regional towns and inner city electorates when it comes to the state election.
They know they can do well in these inner Brisbane areas. Like in 2020 state level, they won almost all of these seats with the exception of two Greens and about four LNP in those areas. I think that they've been a bit underestimating the Greens. That might be why they lost Griffith to the Greens with Terry Butler. That might be why they just losing so many wards to the LNP. And it's not exactly the LNP that's losing it for them, it's the Greens.
And one more thing that I found really interesting, which we already were seeing this phenomenon before last weekend, but it became clearer, is this geographical divide of Brisbane, where there's this outer ring of suburbs where Labor still polls more than the Greens, and then a block in the inner city kind of stretches out to Hamilton in one direction and Pull and Vale in the other, where the Greens are now the bigger centre-left party. It's not completely polarised. It's not that there's a whole bunch of seats where the Greens poll almost all of the centre-left vote and then others where it's all Labor. There is a patch of seats in between where the two are quite competitive and close, but you've now got to this point where the Greens are polling 30% in the inner half of Brisbane and 17% in the outer half of Brisbane. And ironically, if their vote was more polarised, you know, if most of those inner city Labor voters went to the Greens and vice versa, probably they'd win a lot more seats. But, I mean, I've seen a couple of comments on my blog going, oh, they should come to a deal where they don't run against each other. I'm not sure that would work, because I think there's people who want to vote for the party they want to vote for and would feel manipulated by such a strategy. You know, they are not the same as the Liberals and the Nationals, who can do those kinds of deals.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I highly doubt that deal would ever happen. I know Labor has been very begrudging to work with the Greens in recent times. The real issue with that sort of inner ring where the vote isn't polarized is that it means the maximum amount of votes are eliminated, and it also means the maximum amount of votes are able to exhaust.
Now, what happened in the by-elections? We had these two by-elections kind of near each other, one of them in Ipswich, the other one in Brisbane, but kind of in the part of Brisbane that's quite close to Ipswich, kind of more working class, outer suburban, traditional Labor voting areas, but kind of good areas for One Nation too. What has happened in those two by-elections?
My main theory, although I can't really figure out why Labor has lost this huge sum, about 20% in these seats when the state polling doesn't nearly show that. My main theory is that a lot of these areas are very, say, economically left, like Ipswich West, working class, but a bit socially conservative. And now that conservative part on social issues is starting to outweigh them, which means a lot of people are tipping towards the LNP, even if they haven't really changed their stance on a lot of policies.
Yeah. I mean, there is that history of by-elections being an exaggerated version of what would happen in a general election. You know, I mean, the Labor Party lost the 2011 state election in New South Wales very badly, but not as badly as the Penrith by-election would have suggested. That was, you know, the last by-election where they lost an enormous landslide. We're talking about swings in the high teens, low 20s. I don't think we will see that kind of thing at the state election, but it's got to have Labor worried. And, I mean, the last poll that we saw at the state level actually had the LNP on 54% 2PP. So if that did happen, maybe the LNP wouldn't be winning Ipswich West and Inala, but they probably would be winning a pretty comfortable majority.
Yeah, I think what type of seats they'll mainly win are the type of seats that, say, voted no in the Voice referendum, especially by a pretty big margin. I mean, I'm particularly interested to see how the seat of Gladstone goes. It's like one of the safest Labor seats that voted 80% for no. I'm not exactly sure how Labor can recover there. I know that the Voice referendum isn't exactly an indication of Labor vote share, but I just can't imagine how they could recover from such a defeating loss in these regional areas for them with a referendum they proposed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the kind of thing where it's not that voters would be voting against the government because of the referendum. And I think in places where Labor is strong, like I think in the federal sphere, they're still doing pretty well. And in some states like New South Wales. But I think where a state Labor government is on its last legs, which is starting to look like in Queensland, that probably is a good guide to some of the places that they might lose. But I mean, they probably will also be losing some of their inner city Greens friendly areas too. So they're kind of being squeezed from two different directions, which makes things really difficult for them.
Yeah, especially if they have to fight on both sides, while the Greens only have to fight two parties on the right and the LNP only really has to fight with parties on the left. I mean, maybe One Nation. While Labor has to fight both sides, as well as a growing vote share from One Nation in working class areas. Like, if you were to look at, say, Blair, which is a safe Labor seat for them, I think One Nation polled something like 12% at a federal level. And One Nation, especially those right-wing parties, are starting to weigh in on them.
So that's probably a good segue to start talking about some of the other council elections that were also held, because this election wasn't just limited to Brisbane or Ipswich. We might get to a couple of the Southeast Queensland councils, but you mentioned before we came on Mackay. And just as a bit of context, for councils that don't have wards, which covers most kind of rural councils, some of the smaller rural cities, including Mackay, they use a system of effectively block vote, where a voter will tick as many boxes as there are seats to fill. And what effectively is happening in some of these cities, right, is that you get these full tickets running as branded tickets, and pretty much all the seats all fall to the same party if voters follow the ticket and vote for everyone on that ticket. And what happened in Mackay using that voting system?
First of all, of course, George Christensen, very high profile running in Mackay and has won. I haven't exactly looked into how vote shares have played out for the different tickets, but considering it's such a close election, I think it might produce a very, not polarized, very one party dominant system in Mackay, even though the difference between the mayoral results between the generally Labor candidate and the generally One Nation candidate was only about 5%. It might produce a very disproportional result.
So actually looking at the results in Mackay, it's a bit messy, but it's one of these ones where the Labor-aligned mayor seems to have only gotten one person on his ticket elected. Christensen and two of his allies have gotten elected, but a lot of his candidates have actually fallen short and not won. So it's a bit of a messy situation, but he's back on council in Mackay, so that's one of interest. Andrew Lemming, a lot of people talked about him in Redland. He didn't end up getting elected. It was Joss Mitchell has been elected mayor of Redland. Tom Tate has been re-elected in the Gold Coast, and Teresa Harding has been re-elected in Ipswich too. And John Raven has been elected mayor in Logan. That's the race where Darren Power stepped down, and basically all the candidates running for mayor were various flavours of Labor aligned, but he's won pretty comfortably. Is there any other councils that you've been paying attention to?
I've interested in Cairns. I'm not exactly sure if Socialist Alliance member has been re-elected. I know that's one has been pretty interesting.
Yeah, it looks like he's leading on primary votes now, but 28% of the vote. So that would be interesting if he got elected. But yeah, another one of these races. It is interesting for those of us who are analysing these elections, it's a lot harder to analyse them when they're not dominated by parties. You know, I think ultimately it's up to the voters in those areas, but it kind of, it's a bit harder for us to focus on them, and it means they don't get as much attention when it's just a bunch of names on a ballot paper rather than being able to identify who's aligned with a particular faction.
Yeah, I think that's why we're talking so much about Brisbane, especially even though it's such a big council, it's so partisan.
So, Maggie, what have you been most focused on looking into for this election?
Outside of Brisbane, I've been interested in seeing how some of the smaller minor parties have fared. We've seen Socialist Alliance candidate in Cairns looks like he's been re-elected, and there might be an Aboriginal Party member in Lockyer Valley.
And one race that's actually quite interesting that I don't think has been resolved yet is Division 5 in the Sunshine Coast, where the Greens candidate Tracy Burton is on 35%. That actually puts her in second place. It's kind of a close three-way contest with Winston Johnston on 37% and Richard Broomsma on 27%. But if she can pull that off, I think that would be the first Greens win, at least in southeast Queensland, outside of the city of Brisbane. So that would be a big achievement for the Greens. They've often done quite well in certain parts of the Sunshine Coast and Noosa and those kinds of areas.
Yeah, they've been, for the independent Teal candidate, may I mention, made the top two. The Greens were making the top two consistently in Noosa. And the Greens, I think, are very interested to see if they could get a councillor outside of Brisbane. It would be the first ever outside of Brisbane and Queensland, which would be a pretty big milestone for them in growing their support base.
So that's about it for this episode of the Tally Room podcast. Thank you, Maggie, for joining me.
Thank you.
And Maggie, will you be covering the Tasmanian election this Saturday with 6 News?
Yes, I will be on our live stream on YouTube, 6 News AU. You can find us with same name on Twitter and at our Patreon.
I've really enjoyed being able to follow along with all the coverage of local elections that you guys have been doing, all the little niche things. So I'm much appreciated for that. This Saturday night, I'll actually be on ABC Local Radio across Tasmania covering the state elections. So if you're in Tassie or if you just want to listen in online, check it out. You can find this podcast on your podcast app of choice. If you like the show, please consider rating or reviewing us on iTunes. You can follow the Tally Room on Mastodon, tallyroom@mastodon.au, or like us on Facebook. This podcast is made possible thanks to the generous support of our donors on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/tallyroom. Information about this podcast is available at tallyroom.com.au, and you can email questions or feedback to thetallyroom@gmail.com. Thanks to Christopher Burrow for writing the music here in this episode. Once again, thanks for listening.